food for thought on that closing note. Thank you. I'm going to hand over for closing comments to Professor Nigel Cameron, the chairman of BioCentre.
Well, we're very glad to have had you here this afternoon, and indeed to thank our three presenters, one of whom is an old friend, the others of whom I have not met. It was my misfortune to be held up in a meeting in Westminster, in fact, with one of the party spokesmen on science and technology. It was relevant, and so I missed the opening of the of this afternoon's seminar. I have a couple of brief comments to make that have come to me as I've listened to the programme. One is perhaps the commonality in these discussions among those of us who engage is whatever our particular point of view, and there are many points of view in this room and probably more than three on the panel, is that the questions we're discussing are far more important than the other sort of 50-some million people out there realize. Not simply because otherwise they would be in here. And of course, a number of those in this room and at these other meetings we have had do represent very wide networks and key sets of relationships in the culture. But the sort of the weighting given to these questions within the culture is bound to rise and needs to rise, if you like, under control or in a way which is proportionate. Otherwise, there will be a dislocation between the significance of the issues and the way in which the public and those from the broader policy apparatus handle them. And I think that's an important theme which has run through these conversations and certainly was evident in today's. Secondly, I did want to make one or two comments about the American situation, since indeed it was referred to rather specifically. I'm somewhat less sanguine, if that is the term to use. The NBIC document was a bit of privateering on the part of some mid-level civil servants, which has caused considerable embarrassment in the USG. It certainly wasn't a policy initiative for those who are into this particular discussion, which is not to say that there aren't a lot of people around there with a lot of scientific nous, and I do think it is the case that the American government, I mean, the number of different departments in the State Department that are science departments, I mean, they never seem to know how many more of them there are. There are a lot of serious science people in the US government. But I think what interests me perhaps more is if you look at the current election campaign, there has been almost no attention of any kind, aside from some point scoring on stem cells and global warming, but no attention of serious kind at all to S&T policy. And this is, I think, a matter of grave concern, not least in the context, you know, of the vision of Vannevar Bush, no relation of George Bush, who was the visionary in the Second World War, who set the pattern for public funding of science, which basically, you know, the West has copied. And I think there's some crisis points there. It's very interesting. One of the statistics that never leaves my head is an annual survey of attitudes towards science in the U.S. conducted by Virginia Commonwealth University. And when they asked the question, have science and technology caused as many problems as they've solved, they get a yes from 53% of the population. So I think there are very different ways in which Americans and Europeans have concerns about technology, but I think those concerns are there on both sides, and they need to be mediated into appropriate policy reflection. The other comment I'd make is that the perhaps a little cheeky, but Anders is a friend of mine, so he will permit me. I wonder whether transhumanists are the best friends of transhumanist technologies, partly because they have a tendency to brand their technologies in a way which those who are not members of this particular way of thinking, and most people haven't heard of transhumanists, even remarkably informed people haven't heard of them, tend to put them off. Partly because transhumanism has, and here I'm basically, you know, making a point of help to my transhumanist friends. Transhumanists have a way of seizing upon everything and calling it transhumanist, calling it enhancement. I think there's a huge gray area, not least between, if you like, presenting enhancements all the way from wearing eyeglasses, you know, right the way across to these prosthetic feet. All the way across to what I think some of us would regard as more evidently substantive enhancements, which would involve the delivery of capacities which are not there in Homo sapiens. But it does seem to me if transhumanists were perhaps a little more strategic in the way they thought, at least in my terms, they would be saying, these things aren't enhancements at all. I mean, this is not transhumanism. You just need to benefit from these technologies to enable you to be more human. And the word I have gone around using is hyperhumanism. as a way, if you like, of focusing on the capacity of human nature to transcend itself without losing itself. But there's a sort of rhetorical point which may or may not be of help to those who brand themselves in transhumanist terms. Because I think there's a huge amount of rather muddy middle ground here. And this has been certainly one of the themes of this afternoon's discussion. And the question is how we occupy it in the interest, I think, of human dignity, but also of the success of technologies, many of which I think have enormous contributions to make to our future. Now, I have three final points. One is, as has been pointed out, you can purchase a copy of the report on the last seminar on related questions for a mere £4 at the back. And we hope, if some of our speakers are happy with the process, that we'll produce a similar report on this afternoon's meeting. Obviously, there's a much wider dissemination of these things than those who will come into this rather charming room with these wonderful paintings. Secondly, evaluation forms. You are requested to complete these. You make them. You still get a glass of wine if you don't complete them, but if you complete them, you get two glasses of wine. And thirdly, you have here a note of the next two in this series. We're going to go somewhere else for these occasions. We thought that we'd go into a high-tech context for the next one, which is on privacy issues, that is to say the House of Lords, courtesy of a peer who will be hosting us. And we'll give you more information about that if you're on the list. And the fourth, looking at the arts, we thought we might go somewhere on the South Bank if we could find a suitable space. So there's a tour in prospect for those who are regulars. Now, speaking of tours, in the past we've tended to have drinks here in the room. It's a bit crowded. We have use this time of the garden room, which is a very delightful space, perhaps the most delightful space in this building, for those who don't know it. I was given a map to give you directions. It isn't actually very difficult. Perhaps, we will have Pied Piper will lead out. But I said if we could move over there quickly so we can get into that. I'm told you can leave your things here if you like. They will be reasonably secure, or you can take them with you. It's just a walk across the foyer to the far corner. If you were Americans, I would say it's Kitty Corner from here, and you'd know what that meant. It's a useful little word that means diagonally opposite. But if you leave here, turn left, and then turn right, you'll find yourself in the garden room. And thanks again to our speakers. Thanks to you. We look forward to continuing the discussion over wine and to our next meeting, which is in the House of Lords in May. Thank you very much. Kyle, you can lead.